bang, bang, get these done, right?
Pretty close.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and open up the Senate Committee on Judiciary. Thank you all very much for being here. What we're going to do is we have four bills that are scheduled for public hearing and possible work session. I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on the first one, and then we'll do the last three as a combined public hearing. So we're opening up public hearing on HB 2173.
Chair Prezonsky, members of the committee, House Bill 2173 comes to you from the Secretary of State, and it requires the Secretary of State to report suspected fraud or other criminal activity that is found in the course of an audit to the appropriate law enforcement agencies. This passed the House with a unanimous vote. It has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Good. Gary, why don't you go ahead and come on up? And let me ask if there's anyone else who will want to testify on House Bill 2173.
The full House today, Mr. Chair.
I noticed that. Yeah. Standing room only.
Mm-hmm.
Gary?
Chair Prezanski, members of the committee, my name is Gary Blackmer. I'm the director of the Secretary of State Audits Division. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak on House Bill 2173. We believe this bill would resolve any questions that exist about our responsibility to report suspicions of fraud and other criminal activity to the appropriate law enforcement agency. We encountered a situation last year where an attorney from a federal agency pointed out to us that Oregon statutes do not clearly authorize us to report fraud that we find. And from that standpoint, we felt like we needed to come forward with something that resolved that question. We pursued this issue, and with a considerable amount of effort and working through two different agencies, we were able to provide the evidence that we obtained and ultimately ended up in a large number of convictions, or a large number of charges and several large convictions of persons who were charged with SNAP or food stamp fraud. We follow government audit standards, which require vigilance against fraud and other illegal activities, but the standards do not require us to report what we find to criminal justice or law enforcement agency. I have to admit, I was a little surprised to discover that we lack that authority in statute as well. And so from that standpoint, we believe that House Bill 2173 will resolve any questions about that. I would call this bill a housekeeping matter, except that we consider it a pretty important issue to be able to report any fraud or illegal suspicious activities that we find. So this would require the Secretary of State to report to a appropriate law enforcement agency if we have suspicions of fraud or illegal activities. And I hope that you would consider this for passage. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm here to answer any questions.
All right, Gary, why don't you just stay there for a second, because I guess I want to make a comment, and then you may want to respond. I assume that even though the statute doesn't explicitly state that the Secretary of State's office, through these audits, shall do this, it has been a practice, I would assume, to some level, that reports are being or have been given to the appropriate law enforcement agency for them to consider or look up.
Chair Prezanski, yes, when we have found it in the past, we have reported it, but we didn't realize that, you know, someone pointed out from a federal level that we didn't have clear authority or responsibility to do so.
I guess the only other question is, I have not looked at the bill this morning, and so what is the standard for you to be charged to actually make that report? Is there a threshold such as reasonable suspicion or probable cause? Or
at this point, it says suspicion. So from our standpoint, we are looking at records and documents in the course of our audit reports. And if we see something that appears to be a questionable or suspicious activity, we'll do more work on it to the point where we believe that it reaches a certain threshold for us that represents the risk of fraud. And it's likely that more work would have to be done in order to reach some kind of a criminal, you know, judgment on whether to prosecute or not. But we want to alert law enforcement as soon as possible so that we're not interfering with that case as far as future prosecution.
I agree this is not a housekeeping bill. I want to make certain that we do this right and that we put in place everything so the agency itself is not going to come under attack when you have a mandate to require reporting. And then I think the other part on here, when I read through here, it says the secretary shall notify the appropriate federal, state, or local law enforcement agency. And are there scenarios that you can give to us, something we can put on the record as to when you would go, I guess more so to the local law enforcement agency as compared to the state? And I'm thinking where the charges potentially be filed, if it would be the county of where the activity occurred, or if it would be based on some type of filing with the Secretary of State. Does that go to Marion County? And I just want to flesh that out if you have any information about that.
Excuse me, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. In the case that we recently experienced, it involved federal dollars, and we started with local law enforcement, ultimately ended up with the FBI being the agency that worked with the Department of Agriculture in prosecuting, but they took that to the local county district attorney. So from our standpoint, we'd be happy to hand off those cases to whichever agency wishes to prosecute, and we aren't necessarily going to get involved, but we're happy to assist, and we did that in Klamath Falls regarding that case of SNAP fraud.
Okay, thank you. Questions or comments?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think not having a defined bar as to reporting, I think, is appropriate in this case because it leaves it to discretion and also leaves it, and I agree that if you report it to the county, to the sheriff first, because that's the jurisdiction, then you're out of the way of the legal process that goes forward from there. So.
Okay. Yeah, I've just read sub 5, and it is broad, and it does give a lot of flexibility. Any other questions or comments? Gary, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing since no one else wanted to come up for House Bill 2173. Looking once again. And
I think it's good. Your call. But
yeah, I just want to make sure before we open it.
Okay.
We're going to go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 2173.
Move House Bill 2173 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2173 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Okay, I just want to put on here, looking at sub 5, it does allow for the discretion of the Secretary of State's office as to when they believe something has occurred regarding fraud for it to be reported, and in this case shall be reported. It says to the appropriate federal, state, and local or local law enforcement. And it would seem, I guess that would be a case-by-case basis based on the type of dollars or the activity that's being considered. I would hope that the Secretary of State's office will work with the Department of Justice as setting up protocol as to how that will be done to ensure that the agency is doing what is going to now be mandated and ensure that it's not something that is going to be a finger pointing back because someone says, oh, you should have done it this other way. So with that, any other comments?
No, Mr. Chair, I just say I think this is codifying what they're already doing for the most part and just making sure that it is legal. To a degree, it is housekeeping based on what the Audits Division currently does. I do understand that it is specifically spelling something out, but to allow them the discretion as to at what point in their investigation they choose to report, it keeps them out of the way of legal proceedings and make sure that the legal proceedings can happen in the proper way as well, I think. So
Well, I don't know if it takes them out of the legal proceedings because they're going to be potentially right in the middle of it based on what they found.
Well, they would be, Mr. Chair, but having the DA take over the lead of the investigation and them assisting would probably be appropriate at that point.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't see the Secretary of State's office being the lead investigators. They're going to be witnesses that have done the reporting, and I think the important part on this is, from my perspective, knowing that there's different trails of money, to have the protocol from the Department of Justice is how they should do it, because we're now mandating this, and if they report it to the wrong agency and they say nothing happens, then I think it's going to not look good for the agency that they didn't follow, you know, whatever protocol or get it to the right people. And to me, it's more, it may be more appropriate to have them reporting to any and all, and letting, you know, the agencies, or meaning law enforcement agencies, to deal with it. Because it sounds to me that on the example out of Klamath, they started at one level, but because it did have the federal, the FBI did step in.
Right.
And do that.
Right.
All right. Any other discussion? Any objection to the motion? So ordered. And volunteer on this one? Senator Przanski will carry this one. Or Senator Thatcher will carry. Okay. Senator Thatcher will be our carrier on House Bill 2173. And we'll close that work session. And now we're going to go ahead and open up a work session for the next three bills, House Bill 3156A, House Bill 3158, as well as 3159A.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, all three of these bills come to you from the Department of Justice's Child Support Division. 3156 deals with a change in custody of children and provides that collection of child support may be suspended in certain situations when a change in custody from one parent to another would create a hardship for one parent to pay the child support. And I believe our testifiers will explain more what that situation might look like. 3158 is a cleanup of statutes that are involved in situations in which there are two child support judgments. It removes a requirement that later issued child support judgments be entered before January 1st, 2004. 3159 deals with dishonored checks and allows the Department of Justice to collect from the person who provided the Department of Justice with a bad check should they be paying child support on behalf of another person who owes it.
All right. It looks like we have three presenters for the three bills. So Kate, Michael, Richie, and Vera Poe, why don't y'all three come on up? Yeah. While they're coming up, I'm just going to check, since there are a few people in the room, is anyone else going to want to testify on any of these three other bills?
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering what happened to 3157.
There's a story.
There's a story there, huh?
Okay.
Good morning, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Kate Cooper Richardson, Director of the Oregon Child Support Program at the Department of Justice. The three bills that we have today, there's actually four, but one got subsumed into another bill. It's even more boring than the January 1st, 2004 one. And it will be before you, I think, House Bill 2911 now. Didn't want to upset your equilibrium there. Senator Cruz.
Make sure we're all calm.
Yes, yes. Because these are pretty exciting. We're going to hold you here for the full committee length. So we'll deal first with House Bill 3156A. And this is the one where we've got situations where all the children have moved over to the obligor's custody or is living with the obligor. So you'll have a situation where, and this is, of course, not uncommon, as we know, where the children change homes between the parents. And when the obligor, who's been paying the child support, now it has the children, this would allow us to suspend, and this would be all the children, suspend the enforcement when all of the children are there. Right now we are limited in the circumstances that we can do it. We're limited only to when that would result in a credit. There are situations where sometimes continue to pay, even if it wouldn't result in a credit, continuing to pay the full the amount of child support could be creating a hardship just for the children where they're living. So this would allow us to suspend it while there would be a modification of the order, the other pieces play out so that we aren't creating a hardship for the children we're trying to help.
Just a simple question, Kate. You say, let's say there are three kids, okay? So you're saying this only applies if all three move? What if two of them did and one didn't? I mean, does this address that in any way, or?
Senator Przanski, Senator Cruz, it's only when all of the children have moved over, the theory being that still support would be needed for the children remaining with the obligee parent.
I guess I would say, you know, you have a child support judgment and it's $400 per kid and two of them move over and you're still paying the $400 over there when the kids aren't there anymore. So that's a hardship on the kids as well, potentially. So just something for thought for future reference.
Chair Przanski, I'm going to pass this to also our counsel, Mike Ritchie, here to address that. We do have class orders, and so we don't split out by children, but there is a way to address that ultimately.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, I'm Mike Ritchie. I work as the general counsel for the child support program. Senator Cruz, your suggestion is one that we considered very seriously. And we ended up where we did because it's only fair to suspend the order if you know for sure that when you get done modifying it, the obligation is going to flip.
Okay.
And the one situation in which we know for sure that the order is going to flip is when all of the children have changed custody. Sometimes if two of the children change, but that parent has much higher income, the obligation will still stay the same. So it just depends on all the moving parts in the child support calculation. And the one variable that we wanted to control was that all of the children have moved. So we know that when we get done here, the former paying parent is now going to be the receiving parent.
Okay. I guess, Ms. Chair, I was using myself as an example. When my son turned 15, he decided he wanted to live with me. And it wasn't his mother's choice, it was his choice. But I was still paying child support to her for somebody that I was now supporting. So I'm over that by now.
Chair Przanski, Senator Cruz, anyone in that situation that would probably qualify for a modification. It does take a little bit of time, but so are there any other questions on this?
I don't think so.
Ready to move on to House Bill, oh no, sorry, not 3157, but 3158. This is the bill that, the January 1st, 2004 bill. So I'm not sure which session it was, but there was a thought back when this part of the statute was originally put in that we would never have a situation when there was a litigation judgment after January 1st, 2004. So this was a fix that we have to fix. This is the later issued court judgment will supersede the provisions of our earlier administrative order. And the governing child support order process is very complicated and long and administratively unnecessary in this situation. So we'd just like to remove the time limitation for the situations where that arises.
Okay. Any questions on that one? And our last?
Very well. Moving right along. House Bill 3159 would allow the Department of Justice to recover from anyone who issues a check as a payment for child support when the check is dishonored after it's disbursed. Right now we have to disperse when we have someone pays child support by federal law, we have to disperse within 2 days. And not surprisingly, sometimes we have checks bounce or are dishonored for different reasons. Not always non-sufficient funds. Sometimes account is closed or other reasons. Most often it's non-sufficient funds. This happens quite frequently, and about 20% of those that we can tell are coming from a third party paying on behalf of someone else. We are already permitted to recover those monies from the obligor, him or herself, or so who it's been paid on behalf of, or also the employer, if the employer had issued that check. What we can't do is if grandma comes in to pay and her check isn't good, she's actually the one obligated for that money through, but we aren't allowed to go after her for non-sufficient funds at this point. So this would expand our authority just to allow us to establish that debt against the appropriate party. And very often it would be that 30 party issuer.
So just a question on that portion. So I understand you can't, you can still report the non-sufficient funds to law enforcement in the sense of having a check that bounces on you. And I know for a retail outlet, they have to go through a process to actually make a claim for that 10 days, et cetera, all that. Are you saying that at this point we as a state have no recourse in actually getting that money, or is it just this makes it cleaner and more direct?
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, we do have a process because we have so many. Let's see, what are our numbers? How many per week we've got? We get at least 10 per week of non-sufficient, of dishonored payments. And the average of those per week is about $5,300 per week. We do have a whole process for recovery of that, and it works very well. This would just expand who we could pursue for repayment. Right now, it's only the obligor and the employer, not someone who's making a payment on behalf of.
The obligor. Got it. Good. Any other questions or comments?
I'm good.
All right. Thank you all very much.
Thanks.
You asked once again, is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony on either or any of these three bills that we have, 3156A, 3158, or 3159A? Not seeing anyone, we'll close the public hearings on those three. Open up a work session on House Bill 3156A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3156A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3156A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And let's go with, I'm going to give one carrier for all of these. House Bill 3158A, we'll open up a work session on it.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3158. To the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you for the clarification. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3158 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. We'll close that work session, open up a work session on House Bill 3159A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3159A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3159A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And Senator Cruz, will you be the carrier on these three?
Sure.
Senator Cruz will be our carrier on those three bills.
I'll be about that long on them, I think. So.
Yeah. I figured you'd be able to set a good record for us on this, getting into the home stretch. All right, with that, we're going to go ahead and close that, if I haven't already, 3159A. And I believe that takes care of all of our work for today. And we're scheduled to be back here tomorrow at 8:30. With that, we're adjourned. Thank you.